power of our diplomacy. Diplomacy.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a really big deal.
The strength of our diplomacy.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
It does sound fun.
Six, five, four, I want to play this game so bad. One. Deadline.
Well, hello, everybody.
Hi.
Hi. We used to do a podcast.
This is kind of awkward, isn't it?
Yeah. My name's Eric Mead.
Nathan Barnes here.
Yeah. We're
not very good at this. I guess it's really what we're taking it off.
No. We're not going to fall down this festering pit of sanctimony this time. Instead, we're just going to welcome you to episode 26 of Diplomacy Cast, or episode 1 of Diplomacy Cast Rebooted.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
It's better than 2.0 that's so easy to do.
Yeah.
Just don't do that.
Reloaded.
Reloaded.
Like the Matrix.
Right.
So it'll be
They sort of ruined
good.
That, it'll right?
Be, yeah.
But
yeah.
You were excited about it, you got really pumped, and then you're watching, you're like,
I'm glad I am loaded, I said when I saw it.
This is, how about just Diplomacy Cast Loaded?
Diplomacy Cast Totally. Oh, yeah. That's
because we've one improvement we've discovered, we're more motivated to do this if we have a little bit of wine.
Yes. Our new plan, we have all kinds of changes to let you know about, but we may as well just go straight to that one.
Right.
Where, first of all, we're going to drink every time we make a show.
Yeah.
We've gone back, reviewed the evidence. We found that there's somewhere we did and somewhere we didn't. The ones where we did, we feel are better.
They are, and because they are.
And to bring you that kind of quality.
Yeah. Because we care.
We're willing to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that wasn't the first change I was going to announce. I was going to kind of build up to that one. But,
well, but I mean, the name just really worked.
Hold on. I need to drink.
So this isn't we aren't making all these changes. This is by way of an apology or anything like that. But it's just more we clearly something wasn't working right.
Yeah.
So we'll just make it.
We did bring you a bag of apology kittens.
Yeah.
For everyone.
Yeah. Just write us at our new email address.
Well, you still got the segue thing.
I know.
I still got it.
Yeah. Dusted it off. Special.
Okay. The next big change before we even get to that. The next big change is that we're actually going to do the show. that's a pretty significant difference.
Yes.
From
okay.
Before.
That's a bold change.
Some kind of a regular basis. I don't know, but we're gonna do the show.
Yeah.
Sometimes talk about diplomacy, record it, do some stuff. We might have guests. We might not. That won't be different. We're gonna have things to talk about.
Yeah.
Again, we even have some new ideas about some stuff to do.
Which, given the amount of time we've had to ruminate on it,
you'd think we'd have the most amazing show ideas ever, like a list a mile long.
Yeah. Though we don't.
But we're winging it.
Yeah.
We're not afraid to admit we're winging it. The next change, yes, is that we have a new email address, because our last email sucked and kept changing on us and was full of spam and just generally terrible.
And the primary problem was that we often couldn't access it, which really defeats the purpose of telling people to email us.
Yeah. Frequently the password would change on us for no particular reason, and we'd discover that, like, the day we were going to do a show.
Right.
And so we'd just sort of gloss over the fact that we didn't actually do any email. So we're not doing that anymore. We have full control over our own email account, which is
diplomacycast@gmail.com.
I had to update my little sheet and everything so I know what to read. That's diplomacycast@gmail.com.
Yeah, but we are still on iTunes.
Still probably on iTunes. If we're not, can someone let us know at our new email address, diplomacycast@gmail.com?
You know, my favorite part about this show is the professionalism.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the commitment to excellence.
Well, you know, we're highly paid, and so we need to be extremely professional at all times.
I agree with that.
People expect that of us.
So what are we going to do today?
Today we're going to do a thinly disguised infomercial for WAC.
Yep.
That's really the whole reason that we're coming back to this podcast at all, is just to try and get you guys to go to WAC, and, you know, we'll see if we do another show after that. But
that's not true at all.
No, that's not true. We'll do more shows.
Yeah.
Especially if you come to WAC and tell us how much you loved the previous
show.
We'll
do a secret show if you come to WAC.
Yeah, that's right. Only people who come to WAC get the
it'll be a secret
link to it.
It will be almost as good as our review of Compton Con.
Yeah. It'll be along those lines. Maybe.
So, just some food for thought there.
Just saying, yeah. So we're going to do a thinly disguised infomercial for WAC, which is, gosh, A month away.
That's about a month away.
It's going to be good. Can't wait to tell you about all the stuff that we're doing there. We're going to introduce a new game that we've invented specifically for the occasion. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
We are game inventors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure to catch, you know, it's going to catch on like wildfire.
Yeah, it's going to sweep across the diplomacy world.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to, we're going to go ahead and do a little power play segment on a new idea that we were kicking off, kind of a multi-parter. We're going to give it a shot tonight. You can let us know what you think.
Right. With the idea we're going to do more of these.
With the idea we're going to do more of these. We're going to talk about a specific alliance.
Right.
That would be our power play. And that's probably going to do it.
That's kind of going to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to be exhausted.
Maybe drunk.
You know, we're at least going to be out of wine.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true.
Okay. If you have any questions, any feedback, anything at all, now we will read it because we won't have to wade through miles and miles of things written in Chinese to actually locate your email.
Right.
And we'll know the password to it.
It'll also come to our mobile devices.
That is also true.
Which is a vast improvement.
diplomacycast@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook, still up there, still running.
Yep.
Facebook.com/diplomacycast.
Rick Desper just liked it the other day, so it's relevant.
Well, I like Rick Desper, so, what do I do? I don't know. Facebook.
Poke him.
Like him back. Okay.
Like him back. Click on his face.
Rick Desper, this is me poking you.
We'll
be back after this. Don't you dare fast forward this next part just because you think you're not coming to whack.
Yeah, that'd be lame.
You have to hear.
Yeah, well, just because, I don't know, when's the last time you heard a radio commercial about? Commercial. It's not really a commercial. Commercial implies we're selling something, and you would have to pay a fee when you got there, which, not happening.
Maybe not true. Yeah, it's actually pretty free, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty super free.
Okay, so let's start there, shall we?
Let's just run down the reasons that you should be going to this tournament.
Yeah.
A, it's free.
Mm.
You can show up, have the opportunity to play 4 quality rounds of diplomacy for the bargain basement price of $0.
And it's not like it's free because, like, we're just doing it on the cheap and we don't have any trophies or anything.
No.
We got trophies.
Yeah.
We got trophies.
It's not going to be... Yeah. It's going to be just like every other whack, except sort of amped up, a little bit more roided out.
Mm-hmm.
There
may or may not be some food to be eaten.
There'll be food
at the low price of nothing.
Yep, there'll probably be snacks and whatnot.
There will continue to be a bar. We're not paying for that.
There will continue to be a bar. But it'll be downstairs or upstairs, depending on what floor we're on.
On the premises.
Yep, easily accessible, and you can bring it right back to the room. You can also order anything you want, or they'll bring it to you.
And not like I'm doing much work on this, but you have 70?
It's around 70. So what happens is, you know, we're about a month out now. So it's the 23rd through the 26th of January. And, you know, every time I get someone committed, you know, somebody drops off.
Sure.
So we're, I think the last count was 68.
If you get past 10 boards, the world ends.
Yeah, it's really scary.
But that's before Diplomacy Cast Nation.
Yeah, before the nation.
Yeah. Every podcast has like something nation. I figured out recently, so we'll just go with that.
Oh, good. I'm glad you've been doing some research.
Yeah, by listening to podcasts,
excellent.
Not about diplomacy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no problem.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So
that's fantastic. We have a lot of people coming.
So we'll I'm going to estimate now, like, what, 500 by the time we're done with this, at least?
Yeah. Because probably 1% of our listeners will probably
show up. Exactly. That's what I figured, yeah.
Sure. That's exciting. The number of people, that's as many as we had up at Vancouver for the 2007 World Diplomacy Championship, 2008.
Which in turn was as many people as anyone had at anything since that one in Denver in 2003, probably.
Right.
Maybe one of the Tempest ones got that big.
Kind of a big deal.
So kind of huge.
Yeah, one of the biggest gatherings we've had in the last couple of years. So that's in and of itself. This is you as a casual, somebody who hasn't gone to WAC before, or somebody who's just been on the fence about it.
Yeah.
That's what's in store. If you're interested in that scoring system, we're doing Sum of Squares.
Yep.
Which has been...
We talked about an episode.
Yeah, we did actually, the scoring system episode.
Hold on, I'll look it up.
Whatever episode that was, it was a while back. But that's the scoring system we're going to use, mostly because people have found it to be relatively fair. The complaints are pretty light.
Oh, right.
So Anyway, we're gonna be doing that. Standard set of rules, nothing weird there. The format is gonna be we're gonna have top board, so the first three rounds, whoever's the top seven seed of the first three rounds, whoever's number one, all seven will go to the top board, but whoever tops the top board wins the tournament, and then places second through seventh are up for grabs. You know, as we do, because we like as much fairness as possible. You know, access. You don't have to be on the top board to get second place.
Yep.
That's all that really matters. We'll have our normal four extra sort of bonusy awards. We'll have best country, we'll have best diplomat, MVP, best stab, and sort of like the WACON award, which is an amorphous award that
we usually give it to somebody who had the crap beaten out of them
all tournament,
but had a good attitude about it. I think I won it once, even though I did good. I don't know.
Yeah. Because I think this for the second year in a row you came in second. I think that's why you got it.
Will second actually be named the Eric Mead commemorative place?
So we're thinking about it.
First Eric Mead, third, fourth, fifth.
God, that'd be good. So that's the tournament structure itself. One of the things that makes this a little bit special, we're doing a roast beforehand.
Yeah.
On the Thursday, and we haven't actually booked the venue yet, but we have 27 people committed at this point. I'll be sending out a list of names as to who all is committed so everybody can write their speeches, who's going to be there. And we're going to do it just like an old-timey roast, like those Dean Martin roasts you may have watched on the internet or watched while they were on the air.
I
contemporaneously. Yes! Contemporaneously.
Way to go.
Oh, man, I really struggled through that.
Yeah.
That was really good. Glad I committed fully.
Mm-hmm. Got there. Got home at the end.
Yeah. So, yeah. this wine is definitely a great idea.
Yes. Good plan. Episode 17 is where we covered the scoring system. Don't say I'm not doing anything while you're talking.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Anyway, the roast is going to be very exciting. Word is that we'll have an Elvis impersonator there.
You kind of buried the lead there, Nathan.
What? Oh, buried the lead.
Yeah,
I should have led off with that.
We might have opened with the Elvis impersonator impersonator, but I guess
I'm not really sure at this point how that's going to integrate into the program as a whole.
I mean, how could it not?
Yeah. Let's just leave it there with that. There may or may not be an Elvis impersonator.
We'll get him to play Italy on two boards.
If
we need to. Yeah, it'll be fine.
So that's going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
And then Eric
is going to do a
guide a tour.
Yeah,
on Friday morning.
People who have never been to Seattle before, or have been to Seattle but have never done the awesomest, one only awesome tourist attraction that we actually have, the Underground Seattle Tour.
Yeah,
I'm just going to take your. When am I doing that?
In the mid morning.
Friday morning,
right before the round.
Before the round, we will be heading downtown, trooping around, and seeing
as you might think, underground.
Amazing old crap.
Yeah.
Presented hilariously by perky college stage tour guides. You can't miss it.
I really like that you went with perky there.
Yeah, they are.
Because really,
one of them is perky.
Depending on our listener, they can just go wherever they want with it.
Exactly. That's good marketing, right?
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you. So we're going to do that.
And then we're going to have. Then we're not going to sleep.
Probably.
for 2 days.
So the schedule rounds really quick, just for the uninitiated here. So Thursday night, right? Before any of the diplomacy. Roast, big dinner.
That one you'll have to pay for if you want to come to it. So that's going to be, price on that's going to be $50.
Okay.
But it's a big fancy dinner. It's a roast. Think of it like that.
Yeah.
It'll be private. It'll be nice.
You'll be full. You'll be sick. You'll be happy.
You may or may not have your feelings hurt.
Yes.
But it's the idea to say goodbye to WAC, because we're closing it down. Shuttering the windows and doors and
Friday morning. Salting the earth so that no other tournament can grow in its place.
Yeah, that's really what we're going for.
Friday morning, free unstructured amusement time, or come on the underground tour.
Yeah.
Sleep it off. Yeah.
Some people probably go to lunch, brunch, or something like that.
Yeah.
But you can arrive, you can start getting to the venue, to the Washington Athletic Club, around 4 o'clock. Yep. On Friday.
Yep.
Mark will be there at that time. Probably some other people will be there at that time. The round won't start until 6 or 6:30. Somewhere between 6 and 6:30. Mm-hmm. To be there, obviously, the round is supposed to start at 6. Latest, it'll go 6:30. Especially when you have this many people. Sometimes we stagger at the beginning of the rounds.
Yep.
Just to see what happens. Just get everybody on the board, right?
Friday night, Friday. First round.
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock-ish.
I mean, 6 o'clock sharp.
Yes. When six absolutely sharp. There's a 0% chance it will start any later than 6 o'clock.
Well, if you're not there by that time, I don't know whether or not to hold the round for anybody else. So you just got to communicate.
Just be there. Be cool. Be there.
Because otherwise, it'd be really sad to start a round with an Elvis impersonator on three boards.
I know.
Because you're 10 minutes late. So
he'll be like, thank you very much for nothing. And then Saturday morning early again, another round.
Yeah, 9-ish. 9-ish. Well, it's going to be 9.
Probably 9, yeah. Which is actually pretty late.
Which is, yeah, no, because we used to try to do standards. Like 8 or 8:30.
Whoa. Yeah.
No, 9 o'clock. And then, just to give time until the next round is at 6, at WAC, if you, and this is really probably the only time this will happen between the second and third rounds, if games go on as long as they need to go on. So if you have like a 19-hour game on your round, round two.
Then, Doug Moore, we're talking to you.
Yes. You don't have to stop playing, but you will have to play on two boards if mm-hmm. you want to play in the next round. We just seed you into the next board, and
you can play it or not.
Yeah. Or so you have to make the decision if you want to continue playing your other
game. Well, or you can play both.
Yeah, of course.
It's that's totally fine. Because
it rarely happens. It has, though.
After 9 hours on one board, you'll be totally in the mood to just completely start out a new board.
Oh, like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But no, it has happened.
It has happened a couple times. Not many, but yeah. It has. I think we came close after round one.
Yeah.
Going into round two.
That makes sense.
That was one of the
people still have energy.
Yeah,
just like
it's
9 now. Yeah,
I can do this forever. So, and then obviously at 6 o'clock we'll do the next round. Ideally, you will finish your diplomacy such that you have some time to go get dinner. But if not, there's stuff you can order there. Saturday night we do Saturday night things, and then probably
Sunday morning top board. And that's it, huh?
Sunday morning 9:30, a little later top board, and then. Then we burn the place to the ground. That's when we lock everyone inside, light the haystacks. Oh, wait. I mean, not everyone inside. That's
so again, top board for top 7 through the first three rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else should still play on Sunday because
you can
still lock up. Best countries, you can still lock up 2nd through 7th place in the tournament. You can still lock up.
And we're talking awesome to the world's things. Foremost expert on this.
Okay, 1 year I was on the top board and finished 2nd anyway.
Yeah.
The other two times.
Yes.
I just soloed on some people on Sunday when everybody else was playing the top
in
board.
In both cases.
Yeah. And Buffalo was on both of those boards.
Right.
And Micah. Anyway.
Huh.
I know. Weird, right?
Yeah.
I totally lost my train of thought.
Way to almost go.
Yeah.
Way to really rally and just stop short.
3 years.
3 years.
Oof.
Don't worry.
I think.
Oh, yeah, they were close to in a row.
Yeah.
There might have been one skip in there, but the two solos were definitely in a row.
That hurts.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on.
Sorry. Hmm. Don't worry. This will all be bitter.
It'll all be over, yeah, because I'm going to win this year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that would be embarrassing if they did, wouldn't it?
Yeah, kind of would.
Yeah,
kind of would.
Bad job by all of you if I win this year.
I think after this podcast, no one's going to allow you to.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
It's fine.
As long as I get to come in second one last time.
Just to carve your name into it. So, yeah, that's pretty much the event. We're going to have a lot of people there. There's a lot of great people flying in. We got Jan Coulet is coming. Dan Lester will be here from
France represent, England represent.
Yep.
We've probably got like Germany and Belgium and stuff.
No German or Belgian.
They always just show up.
Yeah.
They'll be fine.
It's like barnacles. They just like sort of attach to the hulls of aircraft and just, pop over.
Yeah, all right. Exactly.
Pretty lot. Lots of people from the East Coast. Lots of locals.
Yep.
Pretty much.
Lots and lots of locals.
Pretty much anybody
means weaklings that you can just show up and beat up on the locals. They're terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're a local and you're listening to this, in which case.
And we're just trying to draw them in, anything we can do. So, anybody that you can think of, pretty much is coming.
And one more thing. Are you ready?
I stopped talking.
Oh, all right. Fantasy diplomacy.
Oh, you know what? I think we should segue.
I don't segue. You segue. I just changed the subject when I'm.
Oh, bored. Right. Well, I really want to dive deep on this. So
all right.
So
what, do you want a break? We could put in some music here.
No, we need a bumper, like a fantasy football bumper.
Oh, like extreme.
Yeah.
I'll see what we can do about that.
Okay. Just for right now, whatever's cool right here, this noise that's going to come. Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, I just did that last bit in case our editor doesn't actually make us a fantasy diplomacy bumper. We'll just go with that.
You know, he could maybe take that.
And put some music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Yeah, if you're listening. Yeah, he's probably not.
He's an editor, not a listener.
That's a good point.
Right?
That's a good point. So, yes, fantasy diplomacy.
Yeah, you guys gotta buckle up for this, because this, on its surface, sounds ridiculous. But I think if you take a few minutes and really think about this, actually could be pretty fun.
And we're not talking about elves and dwarves and orcs.
No.
Here, no. Not like that kind of fantasy. We're not talking about... No, I'm not even gonna...
Yeah, I mean, no. Yeah.
It's like fantasy football and fantasy baseball. You guys play those, right? I don't, but...
My studies show that at least somebody who's listening has played it.
Yeah.
Or at least...
Everybody except you and I on the entire planet actually
plays those. Yeah, I think it's pretty
so,
much.
But that's because we've been saving ourselves for fantasy diplomacy, because, I mean... It's right. Yeah.
So the idea would be, instead of, you know, because we don't, you know, diplomacy isn't really a team game.
Yeah.
Just to sort of get a couple of players. We're thinking three, and sort of follow them
on your team. Yeah.
And it's sort of you pick them out and you follow them throughout the course of the year, and we have a point structure, and you sort of vie to see who wins. Whoever gets the most points, whatever team gets the most points. It's very similar to...
like the team rounds.
The team rounds often you have at World Diplomacy events.
So the idea is... the good news is that WAC is the first North American tournament of the year that we know of. I hope that's true.
It is.
Okay. And so we figure that if we do the draft at the beginning of WAC, then you've got your team for the entire year and you can draft WAC people in it.
Right.
So, obviously, part of this is going to be you're going to want to draft people, well, that are actually going to go to a bunch of tournaments.
Right, that's the first thing.
That would be a thing. And so, what we're going to do is we're just going to do sort of like a multi-round, like, I think about a three-round draft. We'll see how many people actually sign up for this thing.
Right.
If you want to play, you can let us know. Before WAC, you can let us know at WAC. It's totally fine if you want to get in on this. But so what we're going to do is we're just going to...
But it is going to start before...
It's going to start... So WAC's results will count, and they'll probably count pretty big because it's going to be a huge tournament. Did we mention that it's DipCon?
Nope.
Wow, we're awesome.
Yeah.
That seemed like an important detail that we may have left out.
Yeah, but...
Of the segment. Yeah. It's DipCon this year, you guys. I don't know how many people do or don't know what that means. I do know we have some non-regular tournament listeners, so we should actually probably stop for a second and completely blow this train before we get back to fantasy diplomacy.
Okay, yeah.
And just say that one tournament in North America every year gets to call itself the North American Championship.
Right. And you bid for that honor.
Yep.
Which we did.
Yep. And WAC won the bid, which means that as an added bonus, if you win WAC, in addition to winning the awesomest tournament ever, and winning many points for your fantasy diplomacy team, we assume, you'll also be the North American champion for the entire year.
Yeah, which is nice.
Nobody can take that away from you. It's in January.
Right.
I mean, like, you just get to, like, walk around.
It's also kind of nice because you get it from January, and probably the next one...
would be in, who knows, June or November. Something. So, yeah, you'll have
like
a long reign. That does really kind of seem important. So, if you are on the fence about coming and you only want to go to DipCon type things, which there are a few of you out there that feel that way, they'll go to like one or two tournaments a year, and
this is one of them.
This is it. All right.
So, actually, you should be, if you haven't already bought a ticket or made arrangements, you should be doing that right now.
Yeah, seriously.
And just pause. Just click the pause.
That's the thing.
Doo-doo.
You can just pause this and come back to our show.
We'll wait.
Yep.
We don't mind.
No. Well, I mean, we're going to keep going, but
yeah.
Pause. Anyway, as we were, fantasy diplomacy.
Well, obviously.
You don't have to draft people who are at WAC, but no, it might not be a bad idea.
Because you're definitely going to have a advantage.
We are going to do this draft probably right before the first round.
Yep.
Give ourselves, I don't know, half an hour, 45 minutes or something like that. What I'd like to do, if it's at all possible, is kind of do an official announcement, kind of kickoff thing for it, and go through a schedule of the tournaments that are coming up for the entire year and ask the people in the room to take an opportunity to raise their hand if they think that they have a pretty good chance of going to that tournament. So those of you who don't just know everybody and know by heart their tournament schedules and their usual rotations, this will be an opportunity for you to be like, ooh, that guy, I've heard of him, and he seems like he's good at diplomacy, and he raised his hand every single freaking time.
Right.
So that would be a thing to know. You know, they may be lying to you. They are diplomacy players, but the point is, I want people to sort of like announce.
Yeah, just to level the playing field a little bit.
Yeah. So when we do the draft, I figure we're going to figure out however many people are playing, and then we're going to randomize who gets the first overall draft pick.
Right.
And then we're going to do like a snake draft type thing. So let's say there's 10 people playing, we'd randomize from 1 to 10, and then whoever gets 10 also gets 11. Whoever got 9 also gets 12, all the way back. So if you get the first overall draft pick, you don't pick again until 20 in a 10-person draft, and then back down again for the snaky thing. That seems pretty reasonable to me. That's how a lot of people
do different
fantasy drafts. If you have a better suggestion, I'll take a better suggestion, but I think that's probably how we're doing it. And then the scoring is not quite finalized yet. For what we're going to do, we're probably going to base it sort of on the Grand Prix scoring.
Yeah.
In terms of, I want to award people, like, the Grand Prix system awards people based on how well they do at tournaments like 1 through 7, but also how well they do at tournaments 1 through 7 in proportion to how big that tournament was. So I want to sort of steal that mechanic because it's in place and there's no reason not to steal it. But I also want to include some stuff for things like best countries, best stab trophies, things like that, that Grand Prix doesn't actually give you any extra points for that I know of.
I think it
rewards you for your overall tournament performance. But I want to be able to give people like as many like little
incentives,
little perks, little bonus things you can win for. I may even come up with some special ones between now and then that I'll announce, you know, that nobody else has ever thought of to give you points for.
Right.
Like, you know, like if you shoot the moon, maybe.
Yeah.
If one of your guys gets eliminated every single round of a tournament, I feel like that should be a couple of points, right?
Yeah, you should,
you should get a little something for that. So scoring system not quite finalized, will be by WAC.
Yep.
If this is interesting to you, then let us know.
And that'll help us out to kind of get ahead of it.
Our secret goal. We may as well just reveal our secret goal now. Our secret goal is...
Suck at secrets.
Well, you're the one who told them there was going to be an Elvis impersonator.
That wasn't a secret?
It's fine. Nobody listens to us anymore. We don't ever make shows. Don't worry about it.
No, this is the real reason.
No, this isn't the real reason. Like, there's a couple of bonus things about this. One bonus thing is we get to talk about it on the show all year. And
right, so you expect this to be a segment on the show. It's also another motivator for us to make shows.
Yeah, and to cover tournaments, which is something that we like to do. So if you're playing, maybe you can tune in and see how your guys did on every show. But the other thing I really want to see, and this is just our own perverse sense of grossness, is I just really want to see one time, I want to see it like totally mess up a board in a tournament.
Yep.
It just, because like the idea of just adding one more little social complexity to an already ridiculously socially complex game is just really amusing to me.
Right.
Because like, let's say Nathan's on my fantasy team and I'm trying to decide whether to stab him or not, and then I don't because Nathan's on my fantasy team and I want him to do good.
Mind
blown. How irritated would everybody be? Why didn't you stab Nathan? They'd say,
he's on my fantasy,
team.
He's on my fantasy diplomacy team.
God, but it just, oh, the sanctimony. Oh, the pain on people's faces if that actually happens. How do you not love that?
Oh, no, I'm a big fan.
Mm.
Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I also, you know, I think it's a good idea to... It interests me that a mechanic in which more people will be paying attention to diplomacy tournaments which they are not actively participants in.
Yeah.
I think it's a good thing. I think any community involvement, any sort of...
We hope you love this idea, because it should be a lot of
fun. First of all, we love this idea. Especially. It's going to happen. You're gonna have to sit through it anyway. You might as well participate.
Right. We think that we'll probably do about 3 rounds, like a 3-person team seems about reasonable, because we don't want to really be like, you know... It depends how many people play. If we feel like there's like... worthy candidates that are being left off somehow, then okay. But
right, it's probably only going to be 3, though.
Probably about 3.
It just lines up really well.
Yeah. Start doing your scout. Oh yeah, you can do your scouting at the Eurodip thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is that URL?
It's Eurodip.eu.
Eurodip.eu, we think. Just Google Eurodip if you're not sure.
It's the European Diplomacy Association.
There's a ridiculous quantity of information on how people have played so far and how people play against each other. You can start doing some scouting and pick out some early.
You can definitely get some good ideas about. I mean, depending on how far you want to drill down, you can get some really specific data on players' histories. It's a great resource that Laurent Joly has spent a lot of time and energy keeping up and keeping together. It's fantastic. If you're ever just interested in, you know, what happened 10 years ago at a particular tournament, there's also a great feature. You can
the head-to-head thing.
You can stack different players up against you. So let's say you're scouting and you're just like, okay, well, I don't know which of these two players that I want to draft. You can stick them both in this engine, and you can get a good side-by-side comparison as to which one.
So when they
play each other.
Here, let's do it right now. Keep talking. I'll just say, let's say you're trying to decide whether to draft Eric Mead or Nathan Barnes. You can just plug them both into the thing and find out
which one, if they were playing a game together, is more likely to succeed, to be a percentage. That doesn't tell you how good they are as a player overall, but it does maybe, it gives you some barometer if you're trying to guess between two players.
I can't find it on here. I know that if you were to plug those two names in, you would come up with it.
We've definitely done it before.
Oh, there it is, the battle. There it is. Yeah, WDD battle. There it is. If you were to do that, you would probably find that... It's not pretty for you, Eric Mead drafters.
I don't know. I think you're doing well these days. I don't think we've looked at it since you were the North American champion that one year. You don't remember that? It was pretty good.
Vaguely, back in the good old days.
Yeah, back in the
good
old
days. There are 5 Barneses, but only 1 Mead. I just want you to know that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mm. So anyway, this is a fantastic idea in which you're able to engage diplomacy players and the tournament in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
And we really hope you're excited about it, like we are. You're going to hear about it anyway, so let us know if you'd like to participate.
Okay, I got this far.
All right.
Nathan Barnes versus Eric Mead. 24 common boards in tournaments. That's
right.
Depressing.
So, 56% of the time,
it's not as
lopsided as you thought.
Not as horrible as I thought. 56.3 to 43.8.
Yeah, that's not bad.
And you can look up how that's calculated. We could probably do a whole episode just on this website sometime.
Yeah, let's please
maybe
never do that.
Have Laurent on, but
I think we should talk about diplomacy a little bit. How about you?
You want to do some of that power play stuff?
Power plays.
Power plays.
Power plays.
Power plays.
Okay, we're going to kick off kind of a new thing.
It's a power play.
It is a power play. We're going to do a bunch of these. Maybe not every single episode, but we're going to throw them in as
needed.
As needed, yes. And as we feel like we don't have other things to talk about, you know. But it'll go a while. Basically, what we want to talk about is some sort of early game two-country alliances.
Right.
And how to do them, under what circumstances you'll want to do them.
Some general thoughts on them, how to get through the mid-game, and then, you know, when to stab.
Yeah.
Which is a nice thing.
We feel like maybe... I mean, something we've hammered at on the show many times before is the indecision thing, and how the indecision thing kills people. And so what we want to do is maybe just cover some, like, okay, make a decision. Here's why you might want to make that decision.
Right, just some factors to consider when making the decision.
And once you've made your decision and you're making it work, how to make it work well.
Right. So that'll be the general theme for all of these that we do. This week.
Yeah.
This episode.
How droll.
This episode we're just going to start, you know, we read right to left. We're going to start at the very right of the board. We're going to do an EF.
Or left if you're looking at it right side up.
True.
Yeah. England, France. A classic. It's one that people use a lot.
Oh yeah. It is one of the most common.
It has some good things, has some bad things.
Right.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Yeah, yeah. Let's start with you know, as Eric was just saying about indecision. When considering in this is 1901,
mm-hmm.
When you're considering whether or not to commit to this alliance, you kind of want to commit a little bit earlier for the maximized effectiveness.
Yep.
You're not that it doesn't work later,
yep.
But you really would rather get this kind of rolling by 1902.
Yep.
Because otherwise, your pace is wrong, and you're just playing catch up at that point,
mm-hmm.
And it becomes a less stable alliance.
Yep. I mean, it, not to say that no successful game has ever started with one alliance in 1901 and then switched to another one by 1902. But what we're focusing on here is, okay, let's figure out who your ally should be in spring 01, go with that ally and make it work. That's what we're doing here. We get that in the heat of battle, it doesn't always work out that way.
Obviously but, not. We're just talking about the optimal.
Let's say you're doing it on purpose, just for the heck of it.
Right.
So England, France.
Right. So you're looking at the board.
Mm-hmm.
The times you want to see a couple of things. This is going to obviously fall into your lap. This almost goes without saying, but just for sake of completeness, if Russia just full on goes east and just
or west, if you're looking at the board right side up,
I can't.
Russia
really.
Full on goes east. That's awesome.
I'm always playing Germany and the one at wait whoever's at the top.
Tell it to the judge, pal.
You know, St. Petersburg. Never mind. just kidding. So he goes completely towards Russia in whatever cardinal direction that is.
Well, or if Russia goes completely towards Germany.
That's also a good thing.
If there's going to be a war here.
Right.
This will make Germany a juicy target.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And that's clear.
Yeah.
You also want to start doing this if, you know, you really can't work with a German. For some reason,
mm-hmm.
Like your communication is terrible. They came over, made a demand, and said, "Well, I'm plowing into Burgundy, and I'm going to Ruhr,
yep.
And that's what I'm doing, and I don't really want to have a conversation with you about it."
Yep.
England and I are locked or something. They
yep. Might as well try the other guy.
The other guy, because clearly you're getting nowhere with this guy.
It's simpler in the West because there's really three, and it's usually two of them.
Right.
Honestly, I mean, there's games where that's the exception. We'll talk briefly about triples in a minute, but
sure.
So that would be the basic things. Like if Russia is showing anti-German, if German is showing anti-Russian, then that almost forces it. That almost
right.
makes you say, "Oh, well, why don't we just do this then?" I mean,
this is as opposed to a fairly non-aggressive Russia, a conservatively open Germany who just goes mm-hmm. Denmark and Holland and holds in Munich.
Goes like, to Ruhr, does
maybe,
something.
Just does something yeah. fairly inoffensive.
Yeah.
You have a tougher time there because, yeah. Yeah, as either country, you know, they're not doing anything aggressive. As England, you know, if he doesn't build fleets, you know, you sort of, you're looking for, this is an optimal alliance when Germany is vulnerable mm-hmm. or...
I guess we should also throw in if, for whatever reason, Austria and or Italy have a weird anti-German thing going on, too. That might be a good time
right.
to get on board with that.
Depending on how it is, because
yeah.
if it's too... I mean, it depends on how that it is, because you
yep.
might not want to jump on board if you're France.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
I completely
agree with that, yeah.
So you want to look for circumstances in which it's both England and France, whichever one you're playing... You have a lot of options.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make this work with the other person pretty quick and easy.
Yep. And so, I mean, you can do it... You can do it straightforwardly, and I guess we'll probably do this on all of these ones that we talk about. You could do it straightforwardly with just sort of, you know, move your pieces and go attack Germany. Or sometimes you need to throw in a little deception.
Right. Because, yeah.
The straightforward thing, I suppose, would be that nobody moves to the channel. That seems important for an alliance like this to happen. Moving to the channel doesn't necessarily shut down this alliance.
Oh, not at all.
But let's start with the straightforward. Nathan's cat's made a contribution. Normally it's my cat that's made a contribution to the show. This time it was Nathan's cat. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm all right. The straightforward version, I suppose. Nobody goes to the channel. France would support himself into Burgundy.
Yeah, loads up, and essentially you load up into the Ruhr and Belgium, and you just, you know, drive a spear.
Yeah.
Right over the Maginot, you just pound away.
You mentioned Belgium.
Yes.
Belgium can be tricksy.
That's true.
In this alliance, because nobody can agree on it, typically, early in the game. France can harmlessly enough go... And we talked about this in our France episode ages ago, and I suppose we're probably going to cover a lot of ground we've covered on earlier episodes. We should mention that, but we're going to kind of try and revisit
just
some
sort
things
of like we're just in from a different light.
Yeah, France could certainly in this alliance like do that and then go to the Mid-Atlantic, take Portugal and Spain in the fall, and just build two, and kind of take it from there. Meanwhile, England could get to Belgium, build to be a little bit scary. But hey, now you've got an army in Belgium, you've got an army in probably Burgundy, you've got two new builds from France, which I guess are worth talking about what the French guy should build if he does that. Two new builds in England, and then you can just start, you know, pounding away.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's a grind.
That would be the straightforward thing to do, and if you can get Russia on board at that point, doing it straightforwardly, might as well, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, you know, maybe you do the old thing where you say, where you figure out that the Germans intending to bounce the Russian out of Sweden, and so the Russia just goes to the Baltic instead,
Now
if you've got a Russian in the Baltic...
Yeah, it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, then it can get really ugly really fast for the German. You can't always... be so straightforward. You may have to include like a little element of deception to it.
And those are really, I think, the better. Honestly, I prefer. Well, maybe it's just my nature, but I prefer these approaches.
Yeah,
just because it'll get you the timing and the pacing that will get an advantage over what's going on in the East. I mean, the East is trying to get it organized as quickly as possible, and you want to, if you're one season ahead, that's going to be decisive later on.
Also, I guess one thing we should mention there is that France can, instead of England getting Belgium in a straightforward thing, France could ignore one or the other of Portugal or Spain in favor of moving, like, taking Belgium himself and getting another army somewhere closer to the front, which is also amazing if you can pull it out off. Like, you know, he starts in Burgundy, supports himself into Burgundy, then goes Burgundy to Belgium and Marseille to Burgundy, and now he's still building two, but now he's in Belgium, and then, you know, England only gets one.
Right.
Unless he does something tricky with Denmark or something like that, but England probably only gets Norway at that point. But then you have, like, all this position.
Yes, assuming you get into Burgundy.
You could, you could go Norway to Skagerrak. Norwegian to Norway, north to Skagerrak, would be or north to Helgoland, even, I suppose. Those are all straightforward, like, wow, we're just pounding on the German kind of options, and they almost, you know, it depends what the German is doing at that point. But if he's at least a little bit suckered, then you're further ahead.
Oftentimes, you're going to run up against opponents that are not going to get suckered like that, so you need to be a little bit more deceptive.
Right.
I think most of these gambits run under the whole getting the English army into Belgium motif.
Mm-hmm.
You could do that.
Or you could call that the straightforward if you wanted to, but either way,
what I often find works pretty well is doing a diversionary sort of a thing where the English, or even the French, but it should be the English, go into the channel, either having worked this out with France beforehand or just deciding that, you know, England is going to unilaterally make that decision and hope that the alliance can be forged this way.
And one little trick that you can do there is your army as England doesn't have to go to Wales for the full-on Francocide thing. Your army could go to Yorkshire instead, which gives you the convoy option to Belgium and not the convoy option to, say, Brest.
Right.
Which makes it, like, tactically a little more effective and diplomatically, probably, if you're England and you really want to work with France, you probably shouldn't go to Wales.
Right. But in order to get the two builds...
You're pretty deep in the gambit or whatever, but,
In order to get the two builds, you probably do the Wales thing, simply because you can't convoy to Belgium.
No, you don't.
You can't both convoy your army to Belgium and also take Norway if you're in York.
Correct.
So if you're looking to have two builds and have the army in Belgium.
With French permission, and then, like, any sane French person at this point would assume that you're planning on stabbing them even if you do go to Belgium.
Absolutely.
But if your ally is the most amazing friend in the entire world, then maybe that
works. What generally happens is you end up with a fleet there out of the channel.
Yeah.
And you decide whether or not you put the army in Norway.
Yeah.
Or you can just, you know, go up to Norwegian and convoy the army to Belgium, and Norwegian takes Norway. And
you could even take Belgium with the fleet by walking out of the channel.
Which I just said, yes.
Yeah.
Well.
Hoity-toity.
Yeah, look who knows stuff about stuff.
And who remembered what I just said.
And of course, the point being that you're in the channel, everybody's like, sweet, England's in the channel, it's an England-France war, and Germany doesn't worry so much, and you can sell Germany
talk about the nuances, but that's the point.
Mm-hmm.
The point is, distract, and then it sort of boomerang into what you actually want to do.
Yeah, that can work. The other thing that can work that's like that is if the German thinks that he's about to be in a Western Triple.
Right.
This doesn't work on every German because, I mean, if I'm playing Germany, I've probably said this before on the show, if I'm playing Germany, and England and France come to me and they say, hey, let's do this Western Triple that we've been cooking up, I say, sure, I get three.
Right.
I get Holland and Belgium and Denmark. And then I'll build three, and I'll go after the Russian, and we'll have a Western Triple. But most of them at that point say, eh, I don't know if I'm into this plan anymore. And the reason that they weren't into the plan is really they were just trying to set me up, because really, but not every German is going to be the greedy bastard that I am, which is fine. So if you have a German that's like, oh, okay, everybody's getting along, that's cool, and what you really want to do is kill him, then you say, okay, you know, one of us gets Belgium. It doesn't matter who, you know, like, and everything will be good, and you can have it later, or something like that. The point is, Belgium has to go to one of you
in order
for it to work. And then the German probably isn't defending himself very well, and you can even pretend to be doing a Western Triple for the entirety of 01 and then just stab with the builds.
You could probably get through Spring 02.
Because it's great. Because Spring 02 is when he'd really make his move at Russia, and it's really great if you get that far with him thinking that he's part of this three-way alliance that he's not part of, because that at that point he goes to, Silesia and Prussia?
Yeah.
And you're just like, bye!
See you later!
We'll be in your centers!
Nice day!
And that's pretty much it. So that's another way that you can kind of, set him up a little bit.
So let's just say you've chosen one of these tactics based on the board. You're watching the board, and you've chosen one, and things are going well.
Okay.
And you're at, say, 6-7 each.
You may have skipped a little farther.
Why?
Well, I mean,
what do you want to talk about?
A little bit about the tactics of how to actually, make the thing fall. Just a minute or so. I'm just thinking that, for some people that are listening, we probably just fast forwarded a little bit there. We've got a friendly army in Belgium, no matter whose it is.
Mm-hmm.
We've got an army in Burgundy, army in Belgium, fleet in North Sea.
Mm-hmm.
It can still be kind of tricky at that point to actually get in there. It's worth mentioning that Ruhr is a really important space to get in.
Sure, that's your next target.
it's worth mentioning that any pressure that you can get on Munich from the east is amazing.
Right.
Like, it makes the whole thing fall apart. Like, he really can actually sit there and resist for a really long time just by, like, making good guesses and keeping you out of Ruhr, like, making the alliance trade Belgium for Holland. You know, there's all kinds of just, you know, annoying, you know, I feel like if it's, you know, my personal nemesis, Dave Maletsky, like, and I've gone and actually made my EF, and we're like, okay, it's on now, we're going to kill Germany. Somehow Dave Maletsky is just going to sit there and not lose a dot for, like, 2 years.
And,
like, then something else is going to happen on the other side of the board, and the whole thing will become, like, a totally pointless exercise.
If you can get some pressure on either, you can actually worse in, it's okay on Berlin as well, if you have that fleet, that Russian fleet in Baltic. Or Kiel, frankly, at that point.
Yeah.
Anywhere you can get something on the other side poking makes it way, way easier.
But
eventually your target is Ruhr.
Yep. If you're France, and if you're England, you just kind of want to encircle with fleets, like get as far into northern waters as you possibly can,
assuming you build two.
Yeah.
You're going to have North Sea free to do something. Yep. Probably it's got to go to the Skagerrak or the Helgoland Bight.
Mm-hmm.
So to either have leverage on Holland or Denmark, probably the Helgoland Bight's the better way to go, because you can kind of do either.
Yep.
or at least kind of maximizes your sort of things you can do.
Yeah.
The only reason to go to Skagerrak is just because you might have a Russian who's something about Sweden, maybe, I don't know, just depends.
Yeah, it does depend on what's happening in his east. If he has no opposition whatsoever in his east and they're all caught up doing something, then you're going to have to make some good guesses at some point. And you did touch on one other thing that if you're England, if you're England and you build one, you're building another fleet.
Right.
If you're England and you build two, you might also build another army, planning on convoying it one of these days in 01. It's probably best for the alliance if England's the one that builds two, even though it's a little scary for France to do it that way. But if you're committed to this, we're just talking about the best way to do it. I would say it's probably better, because otherwise France gets Belgium, probably passes on one of Portugal or Spain, and then he just gets Portugal or Spain the next year, and then it gets a little scary for England. So,
well, and there's also typically France is going to be, assuming a competent defense, France is going to get bottled up. You know, as we were just talking about that poking around from the other side, France is incapable of doing that ever. Yeah. Whereas there is a chance that England can get to a point where they can facilitate that role. So you really want to, if you're going to err on who gets the extra build early, you want to err on England's side.
I would agree. Yeah. One point that does come to mind, though, that I never know what to do here, so let me ask your opinion on it.
Sure.
You're France, you build two. Let's say you just take Portugal and Spain because you have nothing better to do. And you really legitimately are targeting Germany.
Right.
What's your build?
Oh, probably... You're not going to build two armies. You can't... You have to
I know,
build,
that's the thing. That's what everybody wants to do when they're France and they're attacking Germany, is build two armies. But you don't
need
them.
Never, ever do that.
You don't need them.
It's not only that you don't need them, it just...
And it neuters you.
It just kills you. And it starts throwing off the game. Because you can't do anything against Italy and...
But fleets aren't going to do any good against Germany.
They're not, but you're going to use that fleet in 2 years.
Okay, so what do you build?
Probably Fleet Rest.
Yeah, that's what I build too. Right. And England's never quite trust me after I do that.
Right, and then probably Army Marseille.
Right.
Or Army Paris, depending on
wherever the armies are, it doesn't matter much. But
usually Marseille I go with, simply because the Italian, it just sends a message to the Italian, like, nope, don't go there. But you have to have the fleet at some point, and you can't build the fleet really in Marseille, because if you do that,
So now you've got two fleets, where do they go?
Oh, your second, oh, easy. Your fleet in Spain just hangs out there.
And your fleet in Brest goes to the mid-Atlantic and hangs out there. So you can just always go after England, always go after Italy whenever you want to. That's assuming a pretty friendly England there.
Assuming a pretty friendly England. The other thing you can do is lodge that fleet up into Marseille so that you can... you go to Spain's south coast. And then what you do is... Yeah, no, that's what you have to do.
So, I mean... if your only goal really is making an EF work, that's a totally useless build. You'd admit, you'd agree with that, right?
No, I don't agree with it. Because you get to a point, because it's equally useless to have an army that can't do anything.
Yeah, except be there for backup to backup to backup and eventually... Yeah, no, I'm not really advocating it. I'm just sort of being... I'm advocating the devil. I'm being a devil's advocate. Sure.
If you want to, like, make England happy, you build in Marseille. It just... It screws up your tempo. Because Italy starts reacting to that before you've really neutralized Germany.
Fleet Marseille. So you think you just have to build a second fleet even if it doesn't matter. For killing Germany.
It's better to waive that extra one than to build an army.
Okay.
In my opinion.
Okay. I don't disagree. Like, I always feel like I have to, but every time I do an EF, I feel like I'm sort of in a jam there. I feel like whatever my second build is going to be is going to just make somebody upset when I don't mean it to be. Because, like, another army is just insane.
It is. You're never going to use it. It's going to be in the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's as likely to, like, hurt you as anything. Right. So
you might need. So I guess
that's one of the we'll list that on challenges of an EF right there. All right, now so we've talked a little sort of randomly about, like, early game tactics and how to undo Germany.
So we're assuming that you're in the Ruhr and you've got the chink in his armor.
It's starting to fall apart.
Right, he's losing his neutrals.
Yeah,
He's probably down to three pretty quickly. Yeah. Those three are a little harder to crack. Mm. But assuming that you've gone, it's 1903 now.
Yeah.
And
you may have had to do some Belgium sharing at some point, yeah. where like whoever had Belgium gives Belgium up because the other person's about to grow and you're trying to stay roughly equal.
Right. So this is the point in which it's 1903, mm-hmm. maybe it's 1904, and Germany's down to one. Whichever case. But sure. You have like 6-7 units each. And the rest of the board, firstly, is already been rumbling, like, oh, there's an EF, oh, it's terrible, they're going to roll the board.
Which is fine.
Just ignore that.
Mm.
If it's so obvious that there's no point in denying it, then don't. Mm. But if you could have some legit thing, which is the other reason to do sort of like a English Channel distraction thing, so that at least you get a couple seasons of being confused.
One thing I'll note, actually, is that as often as Germany's and Russia's probably, like, should be working together, they don't really do it very often.
No, they're terrible at it.
They're really bad at, like, just kind of going, hey, we should be friends, and push England out of Scandinavia. It, like, I feel like that, in practice, almost never happens. Like, until one or, if not both of them, are already screwed.
It's because Russia's too distracted. That's, like, really fundamentally the problem.
At some point, you see, like, three-center Germany, two-center Russia. They're, like, solid allies, and you have to deal with both of them, but it's not until one or both of them is, like, completely screwed that they really start talking to each other. They have the fear of each other, and
right, for whatever
it's really hard to get past, and it's really hard to, like, be active while they're both still viable. Like, if you're Germany and you're getting attacked by an England, France, you need to be lobbying Russia and being like, come to my rescue, I'm getting screwed here, and you're going to be next, because, England has nowhere else to go unless he stabs France, which he's not going to, because look, they're allies. But in practice, it just doesn't seem like it happens that often.
I think maybe there's
like an adjustment to be made on the parts of Germans and Russian players, but maybe that's for another show. So it's not, I don't know, it's not going to be one of your primary concerns, even though probably people should do that more often. Like,
right. Currently, the current culture is like that. They're not going to work together well until they're just so screwed that they're really just a block.
Yeah.
And a nuisance, but they're not a threat.
Which is why I think you said, just ignore it when everybody's going, ah, there's an EF, panic. There's not that much to panic about, because from England's perspective, that would be the most concerning thing. From France's perspective, I suppose Italy just freaking out and going all the way after France to put a stop to this emerging EF. But again, not something that happens super often, because Italy can't really afford to turn their back very often. They don't have someone
to coordinate with, because the Germans getting their ass kicked.
Yeah.
So
they can do something like support Munich in place forever, but that's about as bad as it could get.
And normally, when you're at this position, when you're at this, like, sort of 6-7 mid-game-ish place, mm-hmm. the Italians miss their opportunity to do anything about it already.
Yeah.
They were doing something else. Exactly. If they had done something earlier, you wouldn't have gotten here because France would have gotten bogged down. England would have said, "Oh, well, you're bogged down. You can't really." And yeah. Things might have happened.
That's so like what always happens to my France.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the key here is, and the reason we're mentioning it is, how do you get past this spot? Because all the really easy stuff is done.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's going to start being work.
Yeah.
And you start eyeing each other's centers like, oh, you know.
Yeah. Another problem at this point is that England usually has too many northern fleets at this point. Like, march on. To Russia we go, right? That's like two more centers.
Right.
That's like Sweden and St. Petersburg.
Yep.
And then there's no more sailing. This is a sail on, not march on, I guess. Like, there's no more really sailing on to do unless he's been really proactive and been building a lot of armies to begin with, which is great. But even then, he's still probably got four fleets, right?
Too many.
Where do they go?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
you don't really have a choice. Like, you could try and... Yeah. So you're going to start looking at each other's stuff.
Yes. Point is, potential shelf life on this alliance can be very limited unless you start to get creative on this particular alliance. Not every alliance is like that. Russia-Turkey doesn't have to be like that. You know, that like there's alliances that have a more obvious second, third target. Like, the only obvious thing to do once you're done with Germany as an England-France is, well... France goes after Italy, well, England goes after Russia, or they coordinate a little in the middle, is somehow. And that can work.
Sure.
So let's talk about how that can work, I guess.
Right. So if we're doing our jobs right, the English has a minimum of northern fleets, and hopefully doesn't have five or four, and there's enough armies that he can pump, convoying them into Denmark, or if... Actually, you could use up a fleet by parking it in the Helgoland just as a more direct convoy route to Kiel. Mm-hmm. But so you're trying to pump those into the center and then pushing all you can into the north.
Yeah.
And the French are doing the same. The French are already in the middle. The French probably get the lion's share of the middle.
Yeah.
Which is okay.
Yeah, it can depend. I mean, neither person should be much bigger than the other.
Right, because it won't work out. And then, hopefully, I mean, that extra fleet you built, you know, in 01 is being put to use with another fleet that you built in 02 or 03 in Marseille to really at least stop any sort of advance in the Med and start grinding down.
Yeah, France can swing around and really, like, especially if he can surprise the Italian or if the Italian has big problems, he can actually get to Tunis a lot faster than he thinks he can.
Oh, yeah, way faster.
And it might be a little while before he gets anything other than that, because Naples and Rome are tougher nuts to crack, but there, once one of them falls, they all kind of start to fall in sequence. And so that can be good too. And so then, you know, you can, like, England would get, like, Warsaw, Moscow, St. Pete, Sweden.
Yeah.
To go from 6 to 10 in our little, you know, assuming you're about at 6. France can get Tunis, Naples, Rome.
Yeah.
Maybe Venice. And now he's at 10 too. So somewhere around there, like, if you're counting it that way. Yeah, and you can keep going that way. The alternative, I guess, is the stab.
Right.
Right.
And usually it'll happen before you get to the 10. So...
Yeah. Oh, and one other thing, I guess I should say. England can, if you really still want to work with the guy and you really can't think of anything to do with those fleets, England can lend France a fleet.
Yeah.
It can go to the Med along with all those French fleets, and that can work. I've had that work before, where you're just like, I could use one more fleet. All right, round it comes. Mid-Atlantic, Western Med, you know, and off it goes to victory. Yeah. And if you don't need it anymore, you guys can piff it.
Yeah.
It's, you know,
nice. Get rid of it.
So, okay. The stab, though.
So... The stab, and I'm not sure what if we're doing a cautionary tale here or if we're just saying here's how to do it. It's usually going to happen around that 6-7 mark because it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
Like, there's going to be some sort of grind in either front that you just don't want to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just easier to swing around. That's, you know, if you're going to stab the guy, this is the time to do it.
Yeah.
Because once you get to that 10 mark Eric was just talking about, you're done. Like, you were just plowing this all the way to as many points as possible while trying to keep the other guy from soloing, and you're either going to get the two-way or someone's going
to
solo.
It starts to look like actual World War One at that point.
Yes.
There's, like, England attacking Turkey and whatever. Like,
because it's just so much easier to stay with your ally and get up to 15.
Mm-hmm.
That's just makes more sense.
Sure.
And
you can do that with this alliance.
Which is great.
Yeah.
And some alliances won't allow for that. But this one, you know, if you can get to that 10, you're going to be in it pretty much until you squeeze out usually Turkey.
Yeah.
Which is usually the last one.
Yeah.
And, or some...
Just the tactics of it, if everybody stays in their lane.
Yeah. Which is really what it is, right? You can north and south.
You can continue to just sort of coordinate down the center. Especially if England has enough armies and really make it work.
So I guess the only point I want to convey is, like, that 6-7 center thing.
That's
the time. That's the time that, you know, this, we're going back to hesitation again.
Mm-hmm.
You're thinking about doing it. That's when to do it.
Yeah. Because don't forget, in this alliance, anybody can just walk into the channel absolutely any time. Like, you know, as a natural consequence of doing well in this, people are probably building things in London and Brest.
Yep.
It's not weird, you know, or France still has fleets hanging around the Mid-Atlantic. That's not weird either. Those ones can go to the Irish Sea just fine.
And especially in that center area, it's easy to skip a little bit out of your lane. Let's just use that analogy.
Yeah.
It's easy to slide in and, like, 3 or 4 centers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, easy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. England, or France stabbing England in particular, like, England's can just melt in that situation where, like, you know, like, we always think of England as this country that's, oh, it's a tough nut to crack. It's so hard to dig England out. But if England is, you know, all their fleets are in Russia and Germany and the Baltic Sea and places like that, and all of a sudden France just gets an inkling to do something different, wow, that can, you know, like, how often have you seen, oh, wow, I really can't defend Liverpool, can I? I'm just losing that, and it doesn't matter what I do.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, a 50-50 guess on London, too. All right.
Perfect.
Yeah, and then Army Wales, and then it's all over. Like, it's really all over. The reverse is somewhat true, too. I suppose it's just like, suddenly there's an England in, like, Belgium and the English Channel.
Right, and it's dropped to Burgundy. Like
Burgundy. Yeah.
And it's like, how awkward.
Yeah.
So, I guess that's what we want to convey. Like,
you want to
make sure to be, that's the point around 1903, 1904. Mm-hmm. You want to have every, that's the time to be cautious. You know how sometimes you get in an alliance and you're like, okay, go. And we're going to talk about other alliances when it just doesn't matter. You want to commit 100% to offensive.
Yep. That would be the part where you start, like, DMZing more and more spaces.
Yeah.
Like, I guess maybe a couple of those might be worth mentioning. Like, at some point, England can start asking France to just not have anything in the Mid-Atlantic anymore.
Right.
France could start asking England to just not ever build anything in London anymore.
Yep.
Like, if you guys really are sticking together, there's actually not much reason not to go with those. Sometimes France will have Belgium, England will have Holland,
mm-hmm.
and they'll both have a piece in there just being like, so I don't really want to move until you move, and I don't really want to move until you move, and then you kind of just have to have a moment and be like, let's just both move at the same time. 1, 2, 3, go. And you just do it. And like, as soon as you do that, like, there's, like, this huge buffer all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Definitely, if you were thinking about stabbing and you're one or the other of these countries, just hovering one or two pieces in those spaces that are naughty, and you just know that they don't belong there, but the other guy hasn't asked you to move them, that's your window.
Yep.
Right there. And you can just do it. Yeah. But if you don't want to do that, have those conversations about your DMZs. And hey, when you have those conversations about your DMZs, that's one more piece that you don't have to have in somewhere like Mid-Atlantic or Belgium that could go somewhere in the front, on the front line. The one thing I wanted to kind of get at about the late game.
Sure.
And we have talked a little bit stalemates before. There's not a stalemate for these two countries. If you want to finish 17-17, then you guys are big Care Bears.
That's pretty much how this works.
And that's fine. And if you want to finish 17-17, it's because you love each other.
And you decide that that's what you want to do.
Because there's no way to force any kind of a 17-17.
No.
Try and find me a line on the board that will force England and France with the places their home centers are and the centers that they probably own and this and that, like, without, I mean, without doing incredibly irrational things. Like, I suppose maybe if, like, France gave England Brest and Paris,
yeah.
Like, you could maybe make a line that way, but, like, it's, in practice, it's never going to happen, and so these games can finish 18-16. More often, they probably finish with one or the other country soloing because it got too big, or a three-way with someone in the East.
And that's really what's going to happen. And I think it's an important point to mm-hmm. really underscore. Like, you're not whatever utopian future you envision for yourselves.
Right.
At the end of the day, it's really really tough to make sure that your opponent can't make a run and mm-hmm. get that last dot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Honestly, you as a diplomacy player, you're going to make the run.
Know
that when you're getting into this. I would say work towards that three-way and don't work too hard to eliminate someone. Get your 16 centers, get your 17, mm-hmm. Get your 15 centers, whatever you can get, and leave that one or two or three dot center on the board.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because
one or two or three dot power, you mean?
Yeah.
No, seriously, a lot of the solos that I've seen as either of these countries have been ones where, like, there was just this grand England-France thing that just went and went and went and went, and they both got to, like, 14, and then it started to get a little weird and scary for the people involved, and somebody was just like, oh, I can take four right now and win. That's a lot of them is both those countries get big and they do a good time for a long time just staying even, and then it all happens at once. So not a bad one to do. Like, if you want a solo and you think you can keep the other guy on the side and just wait for an opportunity, you know, that the thing I always talk about, that one year where, oh, I built two and you didn't build. Fleet Brest, and Army Paris, and yeah.
So that's England-France.
England-France, yes. England-France. We've, as expected, talked twice as long about this as we kind of thought that we were going to.
Okay.
Oh, you know us. Or if you don't, welcome to the show.
Well, it's good to be back. Nice reboot.
Yep.
Good job.
DiplomacyCast@gmail.com.
Yeah,
Facebook.com/diplomacy.
We will talk to you soon, and we'll also see you at WAC
for the Fantasy Diplomacy Draft.